And our objective is to do the entire Bible in 1 year. That, of course, means that there will be a few weeks that we will double do it. We're going to do two books. Before we get started, I want you to pray about this. Alyssa Bowles, who is the niece of Josh and April Sales, is going to be having surgery Wednesday to remove the cancerous portion of her liver. I'm going to put the address in the bulletin. The office will have it if you want to call before Wednesday and get it, which would be good. In fact, it'd be good for us to have this tonight for the card writers. But what April tells me that is the good news is that the treatments have reduced the swelling of the malignancy so that now they do not believe this surgery is life-threatening. And that's wonderful news. Did I put him to sleep? All right. Now, let's see. Are Patsy or Sue in here? Oh, good. I want to give you this right now so that I won't lose it. Thank you. Okay. The book of prepare to fall in love with the book of Nehemiah. It's let's get our footing where we are, and then we'll jump right into the book. The people of Israel, descendants of Jacob, 12 sons, 12 tribes, I'm speaking in general terms. From them come great families. You get to the book of 1 and 2 Samuel, 1 and 2 Kings, and this great nation of Israel comes to its peak as a nation. But before long, corruption elbows its way into the throne room, and the kingdom is divided to the northern and the southern kingdom. The northern kingdom is going to take the name of Israel. The southern kingdom will take the name of Judah. The northern kingdom is much larger, consisting of essentially 10 tribes. The southern kingdom, smaller, consisting of only 2. They are the Jews. They are the people from Judah. They are Judah. 1 and 2 Chronicles is written as we discussed. People return from the captivity. After the division of the two kingdoms, they last for a while but not too long, and the northern kingdom goes into Assyrian captivity. It's because of their sin. It's because God cannot support them anymore. He cannot defend them anymore, and ultimately gives up, and they go into this captivity. About 130 years later, the southern kingdom, the Jews, of course, 130 years is a long time, but it looks like that as a people they would realize that God will not stay with you if you abandon him. And ultimately, they get so enamored with the religions of the people and idolatry, and they turn their back on God, and God allows them too to go into captivity. The Babylonians take them. The Babylonians, however, are soon defeated by the Medes and Persians. And so God's people become subject to these new leaders. Jerusalem is reduced to rubble. The temple is reduced to a memory. The book of Ezra is about getting permission from the Persian emperor to go and rebuild the temple of God. And that, since the Jews aren't viewed as a threat of any kind, that permission is granted. And so Zerubbabel and Ezra, over a period of about 80 years, you know, you have the book of Ezra, and you have the rebuilding of the temple. Great idea. The problem is, about 90 years have passed after the temple has been erected. And the funny thing about the Jews or the Israelite people is that they don't stay faithful very long. And I guess part of it is our perspective, because, you know, we think about a century as not being a very long time when we're looking at history. From one century to the next, 100 years seems rather small. In our day and time, when I think about 50 years, I do think, wow, a lot can happen in the church in 50 years. A lot has happened in the church in 50 years. But just viewing history of Israel, they didn't stay faithful very long. And now the temple is erected, but then they kind of go to sleep about the matter. And the walls are never put up again. Now, how important are walls at this time? Well, extremely. The walls around Jerusalem would defend it from outside military action. It would establish it as being something that is worth protecting, something respectable, and so forth. Anyway, Nehemiah is the cupbearer to King Ahasuerus, or Artaxerxes, as he's called. And Nehemiah is a wonderful man, a godly man, as you will see as we go through this. Now, I want you to get this too. Nehemiah is the last book historically of the Old Testament. Now, why is that true, somebody? It's not the last book in the Old Testament. Chronologically, that's right. You know, the Old Testament goes to Malachi, but follow through with the way the Old Testament is put together. Good. When we leave this history part, we're going to go into the prophets. And the prophets prophesied about faithfully serving God, what's going to happen if you don't serve God, where this thing is going, to the northern and southern kingdoms. And so here we get to Nehemiah, and this is the last revelation from God until we get to the New Testament. You've got a 400-year gap there. The first time that you have message from heaven again directly is going to be in Luke, the first chapter, to Zechariah, who is the daddy of John the Baptist. And so the silence will be broken, and then we have the New Testament revealed. But here we come to the people, the southern kingdom, the Jews, coming back to Jerusalem to rebuild the walls. And soon we'll get to the point where we're going to jump over into the New Testament. When we get to that 400-year gap, we'll have a lot to talk about because, I mean, think about what happened during that 400 years. You hop into the New Testament and you've got the Jews divided into all different kinds of sects, the sect of the Herodians or the Zealots or the Pharisees or the Sadducees. Where did that come from? You didn't see that at the close of the Old Testament. It happened during those 400 years. And we'll develop those things and talk about them some more. Maccabees. All right. Nehemiah came to Jerusalem in 445 B.C. The remnant again had been in Judea over 90 years. Zerubbabel and his contemporaries who participated in the rebuilding of the temple, they're now gone. The temple had been built, took 4 years, 5 months, and 10 days. But now, what has happened? I mean, The walls are in great ruins. People are discouraged. Chapter 1 and verse 3, the people are in much reproach and there's hunger. Chapter 5 and verse 3, some of the poor people had mortgaged their own lands to other Jews who were better off. Chapter 5, verse 5, there's a laxity about the Sabbath and about other obligations to God. Okay, Nehemiah the cupbearer, chapter 1. And I think for the sake of time, what I want to do is to tell this rather than read it. I got some passages I really want to read. But Nehemiah has a chance to ask someone who is in the know about Jerusalem. How are things going? How are things with my people? And the report back from his brother is not good. Well, the walls have never been rebuilt. And the spiritual life is very, very poor, and their service to God is very, very poor. It's all depressing. And Nehemiah begins to weep, and he fasts for a few days, and he prays. And he goes before the king with the cup, because he's the king's cup bearer. And the king immediately, Ahasuerus, immediately looks at him and says, something's really wrong with you. This is a sickness of the heart. You tell me what's going on. My people. He said, the walls are not built. My people are in terrible condition. What would you like? I'd like to go back. Now, it's one thing to get into captivity. It's another thing to get out. But Ahasuerus really trusts Nehemiah. And he says, how long will you be gone? And they talk this over. And the king gives him the wherewithal and permission to go back and build the walls of Jerusalem. That's what the book of Nehemiah is about. Yes, sir. Yes, yes.
Read that 10 times.
It's rich. In fact, if you think about it, there are several statements in the book of Nehemiah that are just so profound. Excellent point. So Nehemiah sets out to go and rebuild the walls. What he's going to do first, after he gets there, and of course, there's a lot of people watching him. Now, there are governors along the way, heathen governors. And he knows that they're going to be paying attention to him, and some may try to thwart what he's doing. And so before he leaves, he has the king give him a writ that gives him permission. I'm the king. I give this man Nehemiah permission to go to Jerusalem and to do what he set out to do, to build these walls, and I want you to let him through. And so, sure enough, on the way, you know, getting into there, he sees Sanballat and Tobiah, who are against God and God's people, and they have positions of authority, but Nehemiah's got that writ. He's got that paper from the king. When he gets there, he gets his friends in the middle of the night, and they go out to survey the wall and the city. He doesn't want people to know yet what he's about to do because he knows there's going to be opposition. And he finds it just in ruins. It's just rubble is what it's reduced to. And so Nehemiah sets out to rebuild the walls. Any comment here? Point number two, the wall builder. Forty-two different work groups are set up, each working on the part of the wall nearest to where they lived. Look at chapter 3 and verse 10, for example. Next unto them repaired Jedidiah, the son of Harumpha, even over against his house. And next unto him repaired Hattush, the son of Hashbaniah. And it goes on. Now, why would you put repairmen over close to their houses where they're going to live? Why would you put wall builders right beside where they're going to live? That's it. They're going to do the very best they can in building that, because they're going to have to live there. So successful was Nehemiah in this leadership and this plan that the wall was completely rebuilt in just over 7 weeks. Chapter 6, verse 15. Then in chapter 7, the gates were set up. Nehemiah did all this within 6 months of his mandate from Artaxerxes. Now, per your outline, I want to talk about the kinds of opposition. I've divided them into three forms of opposition from without and then three from within, hindrances from within. Here's chapter 4, beginning in verse 1. Hindrances, opposition from without. But it came to pass that when Sanballat heard that we builded the wall, he was wroth, took great indignation, and mocked the Jews. You're going to build this wall? He spake before his brethren in the army of Samaria and said, what do these feeble Jews? Will they fortify themselves? Will they sacrifice? Will they make an end in a day? Will they revive the stones out of the heaps of the rubbish which are burned? Now Tobiah, and you're going to hear some about him in chapter 13, the Ammonite was by him and said, even that which they build, if a fox go up, he shall even break down their stone wall. Hear, O God, O our God, for we are despised, and turn their reproach upon their head, and give them for a prey in the hand of captivity. Cover not their iniquity. Let not their sin be blotted out from before thee, for they have provoked thee to anger before the builders. So built we the wall, and the wall was joined together unto the half thereof, for the people had a mind to work.
That could be well said about
What Paul said is that this could be truly said about the West Huntsville Church of Christ, that people have a mind to work. You know, as long as they do, things will go forward. That's right. It's good. The second form of opposition was force. Drop down now to verse 7, same chapter. It came to pass that when Sanballat and Tobiah and the Arabians and the Ammonites and the Ashdodites heard that the walls of Jerusalem were made up and that the breaches began to be stopped, then they were wroth and conspired all of them together to come and fight against Jerusalem and to hinder it. Nevertheless, we made our prayer unto God and set a watch against them day and night because of them. Drop down to verse 12. Came to pass that when the Jews which dwelt by them came, they said unto us 10 times, from all places whence ye shall return unto us, they will be upon you. We're going to come and keep coming. We're going to destroy you. Therefore said I in the lower places behind the wall, and on the higher places, I even set the people after their families with their swords, their spears, their bows. And I looked and rose up and said unto the nobles and to the rulers and to the rest of the people, be ye not afraid of them. Remember the Lord, which is great and terrible. And fight for your brethren, your sons, your daughters, your wives, your houses. It came to pass when our enemies heard that it was known unto us, and God had brought their counsel to naught, that we returned all of us to the wall, every one to his own work, to his work. And it came to pass from that time forth that the half of my servants wrought in the work, and the other half of them held both the spears, shields, bows, and the habergeons. And the rulers were behind all the house of Judah. And they which builded on the wall, and they that bear burdens with those that laded, every one with one of his hands wrought in the work, and with the other hand held a weapon. For the builders, every one that had his sword girded by his side, and so builded, and he that sounded the trumpet was by me. I said to the nobles, to the rulers, to the rest of the people, the work is great and large, and we are separated upon the wall, one far from another. In what place therefore you hear the sound of the trumpet, resort ye thither unto us. Come quick, our God shall fight for us. So we labored in the work, and half of them held the spears from the rising of the morning till the stars appeared. Likewise, same time I said to the people, let every one with his servant lodge within Jerusalem, that in the night they may be a guard to us and labor on the day. Now look at 23. This is interesting. So neither I nor my brethren nor my servants nor the men of the guard which followed me, none of us put off our clothes, saving that everyone put them off for washing. In other words, they didn't take off their clothes when they went to sleep. They just left their clothes on so that they could be ready to fight at any moment. Any moment. But now that wasn't the only opposition. Drop down now to chapter 6 and verse 1. It came to pass when Sanballat and Tobiah and Geshem, the Arabian, and the rest of our enemies heard that I had built the wall and that there was no breach left therein, though at that time I had not set up the doors upon the gates. Then Sanballat and Geshem sent unto me, saying, come, let us meet together in some one of the villages in the plain of Ono. But they thought to do me mischief. Now don't miss this, because this is critical. They realized that militarily they couldn't stop the building of the wall. So now that it's finished except for the hanging of the gates, the enemies say, look, I tell you what, let's have lunch. Let's do lunch. You come and we'll go down to the plains of Ono and we'll visit. But Nehemiah says, I knew they wanted to do me mischief. And I sent messengers unto them saying, this is verse 3, I am doing a great work. You know what? I love that. When you're doing service for the Lord, you're doing a great work. You think it was prideful for Nehemiah to look at what he's doing with the walls of Jerusalem and say, I'm doing a great work. This is important. I want you to feel that way about your work for the Lord too. I'm doing a great work so that I cannot come down. Why should the work cease while I leave it and come down to you? Yet they sent unto me 4 times after this sort, and I answered them after the same manner. Then sent Sanballat and his servant unto me in like manner the 5th time with an open letter in his hand. Get this. Wherein was written, it is reported among the heathen, and Geshmu saith it, that thou and the Jews think to rebel. Now you're going to rebel. For which cause thou buildest the wall, that thou mayest be their king according to these words. that thou hast also appointed prophets to preach of thee at Jerusalem, saying, there's a king in Judah, and now it shall be reported to the king according to these words. Come now, therefore, and let us take counsel together. In other words, I hear a rumor. There's a rumor out that you are going to commit treason, that you're going to have an insurrection against the present government. And I could go and tell them, may do it. Maybe you and I should sit down and talk. In other words, scare him into coming to sit down and talk. Verse 8. Then I sent unto him, saying, there are no such things done as thou sayest, but thou feignest them out of thine own heart. You made that up. For they all made us afraid, saying, their hands shall be weakened from the work of the Lord, and from the work that it be not done. Now therefore, O God, strengthen my hands. Afterward I came to the house of Shemaiah, the son of Deliah, the son of Mehetabeel, who was shut up, and he said, let us meet together in the house of God within the temple, and let us shut the doors of the temple. For they will come and slay thee. Yea, in the night they will come and slay thee. And I won't read it all, but he says, I'm not going to come. I will not come. I will not go down to the plains of Ono and meet with you. And you got to appreciate this. The work is good, and I'm not going, it's right, and I'm not going to compromise at all. I know who you are. I know what you're trying to do. I know your objective. I will not compromise, and I will not come and spend time talking with you about this. Now, there were three forms of hindrances on your outline there from within. The first one is pretty simple. In chapter 4 and verse 10, the debris is just so heavy. Judah said the strength of the bearers of burdens is decayed, and there is much rubbish so that we are not able to build the wall. It's just too big a job. That's about the hearts of the people within. And of course, they changed their minds. But then also there's fear. Look at chapter 4, verse 11. And our adversaries said, they shall not know, neither see, till we come in the midst among them and slay them and cause the work to cease. And it came to pass that when the Jews which dwelt by them came, they said unto us 10 times, from all places whence you shall return unto us, they will be upon you. In other words, fear. Because if you try this, if you start to build, there are going to be enemies on you all the time. You cannot succeed. You will fail. Now the next one is in chapter 5. This one may surprise you. Again, for time's sake, let me just tell this. Over those years, the Jews, of course, owned property, but they became very poor. Yet some of the Jews were still wealthy. And the wealthy ones took advantage of the poor ones. Sometimes the poor ones would sell their farms, their land and houses to the richer ones to get money to pay their tribute or taxes to the king. And it had become deplorable. The rich had gotten richer. And so Nehemiah's perspective was, look, we're all part of a family here. And we have sacrificed. All of us have sacrificed. And you have too. And I want you to give them back their property. I want you to reverse these decisions. Now let's pick up a couple of key verses. We're in chapter 5, verse 6. Look at verse 6. I like this. When he realized what was going on, the Bible says, Nehemiah says, I was very angry when I heard their cry and these words. Then I consulted with myself. I thought this over, and I rebuked the nobles and the rulers and said unto them, you exact usury interest, every one of his own brother. And look at the rest. And I set a great assembly against them. Now, I assume what that means is he gathered a crowd of Jews together, and in the presence of this assembly, he rebukes these rich men. Their response was, Nehemiah, we'll give it back. You're right about this, and we're going to give it all back. And he said, I've heard your vow. It's before God, and you see to it that you do it. All right. Any comment that you want to make here? I know we're going fast. In the balance of the chapters 7 through 13, Nehemiah is to become governor of Judah. And chapter 7, verse 1, it came to pass when the wall was built and I had set up the doors and the porters and the singers and the Levites were appointed, I gave my brother Hanani, and Hananiah, the ruler of the palace, charge over Jerusalem. Now I've underlined the next sentence or clause in my Bible. For he was a faithful man and feared God above many. Now, think about this. Think about the history of the Israelite people that you know. Think about when the kingdom split. And Solomon's son Rehoboam was set up as king, but he acted foolishly, and so the 10 tribes selected Jeroboam to be their leader. And Jeroboam had wickedness in his heart, not a devotion to God. What happens among people when you set up an evil man to be their leader is that, of course, the things are going to decline. And don't you love a leader like Nehemiah? Because when he set up and delegated authority to others, look at what he was looking for. Verse 2, he was a faithful man and feared God above many. That's why I picked him. That's why I want him to be in this leadership position. Verse 5, another thing that Nehemiah did was to make sure they had the genealogy, the family tree. Now, why is that important? Why did he want to make sure that they had good, clear records of the family tree? That's it. Because the Messiah is going to come. And they've got to keep this clear to demonstrate the authority of God and the power of God through these generations to bring about Jesus ultimately. And so in verse 5, and my God put into mine heart to gather together the nobles, rulers, people, that they might be reckoned by genealogy. And then he carries this out. In chapter 8, you have what I've called on your outline the Back to the Bible movement. And what a precious chapter this is. Let's just read a little bit of it in the time that we have. And all the people gathered themselves together as one man into the street that was before the water gate. I want you to picture this now, all these Jews getting together. They spake unto Ezra the scribe to bring the book of the law of Moses, which the Lord commanded to Israel. Get us the Bible. Bring us the Bible. Ezra the priest brought the law before the congregation. Both men and women, and all that could hear with understanding, upon the first day of the seventh month. And he read therein before the street that was before the water gate from the morning until midday before the men, women, and those that could understand. And the ears of all the people were attentive unto the book of the law. And Ezra the scribe stood upon a pulpit of wood which they had made, dropped down to 5. And Ezra opened the book in the sight of all the people, for he was above all the people. And when he opened it, all the people stood up. And Ezra blessed the Lord, the great God, and all the people answered, Amen, Amen, with lifting up their hands, and they bowed their heads and worshiped the Lord with their faces to the ground. Verse 8, so they read in the book in the law of God distinctly and gave the sense and caused them to understand the reading. Now there's the heart of the people at this point. Now, go with me to chapter 13 and we'll wind it up. The last glimpses of Nehemiah. In chapter 13, Nehemiah has to do some house cleaning. And there are 3 or 4 things that he finds. And chapter 13 is about how he finds those things and corrects those things. On the day that they read the book of Moses in the audience of the people, therein was found written that the Ammonite and the Moabite should not come into the congregation of God forever. And the reason is given there. So here's an old law of which they were unfamiliar. They had forgotten this one. Verse 4. And before this, Eliashib, the priest having the oversight of the chamber of the house of our God, the temple, was allied unto Tobiah. And he was an Ammonite. And apparently, this priest had set up Tobiah somewhere there in the temple, set him up a place to live and bring his idolatrous gods, and it had to be cleaned up. Verse 5, he had prepared for him a great chamber, where in aforetime they laid the meat offerings, frankincense, vessels, etc., that was commanded to be given to Levites and singers. And so, let's see, verse 8, and it grieved me sore. Therefore I cast forth all the household stuff of Tobiah out of the chamber. Then I commanded, and they cleansed the chambers. And thither brought I again the vessels of the house of God with the meat offering and frankincense. So he took care of that first problem. Get rid of Tobiah. Get him out of here. Get all of his stuff out of the temple. The second thing was the Levites hadn't been taken care of, starting with verse 10. And then verse 15, the third problem was that people were working on the Sabbath. In those days saw I and Judah some treading wine presses on the Sabbath, bringing in sheaves, lading asses, wine, grapes, figs, manners of burden which they brought into Jerusalem on the Sabbath day. And I testified against them in the day wherein they sold victuals. And so he contended with them and cleaned this up. You've got to respect the Sabbath. And so they said, well, we got people coming in the gates of the city every week bringing in their wares to sell. And Nehemiah said, that's how it used to be. It's not going to be that way now. And he shut those gates on the Sabbath and had them locked where these sellers couldn't enter in. You couldn't work on the Sabbath. So he's going back to the law of God, the authority of God with reference to the Sabbath. And then the last one was a reoccurring problem. Remember when God first sent Israel into Canaan? The book of Joshua. And he warned them about marriage. What was the warning about marriage? Somebody? Don't intermarry. You can't marry those heathen people. In fact, of course, their job was to go in and destroy the Canaanitish people. But for sure, if you fail in that, don't marry. Don't give your sons and daughters to marry those idolatrous people. Because if you do, you won't be able to stop what's going to happen. What will happen is you're going to raise up generations that are sympathetic to idolatry, and you're going to end up very shortly with a whole generation, or pretty much a whole generation, that forsakes God. Well, that happened, and it happened over and over. Well, it's still happening. So here they are, and Nehemiah is doing so much. Ezra, Zerubbabel, they built the temple, and now Nehemiah has built the fence, the walls around Jerusalem, and they're getting back to doing right. The Sabbath day is reinstated with the kind of respect it should have, and the temple is being treated with respect, and the law of Moses is being read. And he looks out there, and you know what? The people are still intermarrying with those idolatrous people of the land. Now, brace yourself for how Nehemiah reacts to this. I mean, enough is enough. I think Nehemiah is a student of history, and he knows the Old Testament. He knows what has happened in Israel, and he's had his fill of this. I'm in Nehemiah 13, the last chapter, verse 23. In those days also saw I Jews that had married wives of Ashdod, of Ammon, of Moab, and their children spake half in the speech of Ashdod, and could not speak in the Jews' language, but according to the language of each people. I've got that underlined in my Bible. This part, children spake half in the speech of Ashdod. In other words, these children are growing up. You look at these little children, and you know what? They're going to grow up and serve idols, and they're going to be lost, and they're going to end up sacrificing your great-grandchildren to these idolatrous gods, and this has got to stop. Listen to those children talk. They can't even talk in the language of the Jews. They talk in the language of the idolatrous heathen. 25. And I contended with them and cursed them and smote certain of them and plucked off their hair and made them swear by God, saying, you shall not give your daughters unto their sons, nor take their daughters unto your sons for yourselves. Did not Solomon, king of Israel, sin by these things? Don't you love a man who knows history? Nehemiah knows that if you don't correct these things, you're going to repeat history. It's going to happen again. And he's trying so hard to get the people back on track with God. Didn't Solomon, king of Israel, sin by these things? Yet among many nations was there no king like him. I know that. Who is beloved of his God, and God made him king over all Israel? Nevertheless, even him did outlandish women cause to sin. Shall we then hearken unto you to do all this great evil, to transgress against our God and marrying strange wives? Verse 30. Thus I cleansed I them from all strangers, the strangers of the idolatrous people, and appointed the wards of the priests and the Levites, everyone in his business, and for the wood offering at times appointed, and for the first fruits. Remember me, O my God, for good. Observe, Christians, how Nehemiah handled each of these issues, and he did it with God's approval. And I want you to feel the fervor with which he did this, because that evidences the weight of these matters. The getting that temple cleaned out. You've got to get that Tobiah out of there. He's idolatrous. You've got to get this clean. Sometimes before you can go forward, you've got to go backwards. Sometimes you've got to clean the house. And that's what he's doing. He cleaned the temple, and then he corrected the Sabbath day practice. We've got to get back to the law and respect the Sabbath. We're going to do it right, I tell you. We're going to do it right. And then he observes this marriage thing, and he smites them, and he pulls out some of their hair, and he points his finger at them and says, "Now listen, this is going to stop. It's going to stop." He was enraged at them, and he needed to wake them up, and that's what he did. And thus ends the book of Nehemiah. What I want you to remember about Nehemiah is that it's about a great man of God who came back to rebuild the walls of Jerusalem after the temple had been built. He came back to restore God's people to the authority of God, to get them back to the authority of God. It's a principle that needs to be practiced often today to remind us of the book, to remind us of God's will, and to keep our feet firmly planted on the ground when we deviate from his will. Any comments you want to make here? Yes, sir. Excellent point. What he observed is that Hosea said that the people's faithfulness was like the morning cloud and the dew. And in Alabama, we talk about, if you don't like the weather, you know what you can do, don't you? Just wait around, because it'll change. It's always changing. And sometimes the people of the Jews look like that. Israelite people through the history are like that. It just keeps changing, and that's very sad. I just want to make sure that it's not true in my life. We'll make sure that we stay, you and I stay, faithful to our God. Any other comments? Don't you love the book of Nehemiah?